This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
I'll tell you, if it mellows Kavanaugh out and we don't get the ugly decisions that I anticipate are coming, I'll pay for the keg. I'm sure there'd be a lot of people who would help put a tap in, keep Kavanaugh juiced for the next 40 years on the Supreme Court if he doesn't repeal the 20th century. How about it? Is there an idea in that? I think it's actually a pretty damn good idea. Maybe one we should look into because I see lots of bad things coming. Unless we can sauce Kavanaugh up a little bit. Anyway, here to talk about what's going on in the world. Now that we are in the Kavanaugh era on the Supreme Court, our good friend Scott Dworkin, a host of the Dworkin Report. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
I'm good, but I like beer. Beer.
I've got a shirt with beer on it. Well, not beer itself, but it says beer on it, and it's got a head of a bear with antlers like a deer. So
there you go. So what do you think of the idea? We get a keg, we keep him sauced, no bad stuff happens.
I think that's when the bad stuff does happen, though. It seems. Then you see him flip out during his hearing as well. So, he'll don't worry. He just has to recuse himself from everything. You know, there's nothing that he can actually sit on that I see would be fair. Yeah. I don't see anything where he doesn't have a conflict. It's a disgrace. What I keep on reminding people is that, you know, when he's appointed by an illegitimate president, it makes him illegitimate as well. And if it's found out that Trump cheated and committed election fraud and, you know, conspired with Russia to win the election, then everyone should be removed from their position. And it should be unprecedented. And I'm telling you, like I've told everybody else, before we had the Mueller probe and before we had anything else that was going on to anyone, that it all starts with, you know what we should do? It's got to start somewhere. But there wouldn't be a Mueller probe if people weren't poking around seeing what was possible for an investigation. And so, you know, talk about removal, impeachment. I mean, it's not necessary between now and election. It just gives Republicans basically some meat to hit us back. And so, I don't think right now, I don't think that it's ever going to be out of the question for removal. But it's going to have to involve some Republicans, too, and probably some new information that surfaces or more organized and real investigation.
Now, I understand the news today, of which you're actually part of. There were 15 complaints that John Roberts passed along to, a federal judge in Colorado, federal appeals court there in Colorado. Now, who knows what's going to happen? As I've been reading, the thought is that, you know, they'll look at it and they'll throw it out because they don't know what to do. But I understand one of your complaints, actually of the 15.
Yeah, so we submitted two different complaints, one for his perjury and the other one later on for his Fox News interview. And so the way that it was set up, it's defined as propaganda and violating the Code of Judicial Ethics. So we filed those complaints via our attorney, Jay Whitfield Larrabee. And so there were very, very official, succinct complaints that I turned in person to the appeals court. And they took them very seriously. The problem being, though, they didn't entertain them quick enough, which they should have before his confirmation hearing. And they should have also waited to see where that led before, you know, even having a hearing with them. But that was we wanted to make sure, just like we do with a lot of things, we filed, you know, over, I think, close to 100 complaints on over 60 members of the Trump administration and Trump himself over the past 2.5 years. And some of those paper trails have ended up, you know, leading to people's prison. And so we wanted to make sure that we just had a paper trail. We weren't sure where it would lead. And there is no precedent right now for him to be held accountable for the things that he did while he was an appeals judge. And now he wasn't serving on the bench when he did that, but you're representative of the bench at all times when you are a judge. So I think that it's valid. You know, there's a couple of things that can happen. One is they can throw him out, which I'd say, you know, it would be easy for them to do. The next thing they can do, which is what Fox News is reporting, funny enough, is that he's actually being investigated through it. And so if they're taking it seriously like that, the worst thing that could happen to him is then they basically write up a recommendation of impeachment from either his appeals court, which he still apparently sits on until he resigns, or on the Supreme Court, which again, that's a really out there, probably not going to happen. But that is the worst thing that could probably happen, is a full investigation into him. Fox News is acting like that's happening. My guess is so that they can say that he was cleared when it's dismissed, if it's dismissed.
That, and also to rile up the base by saying, look at what these liberal groups are doing. They're still torturing a good man.
And Bush appointee judge in Colorado.
Right. Like,
you know, it's that's who's got the case now, handed over by John Roberts on the, you know, it basically he sat on it, and now it's but again, it was just to file the paper trail. It still is clear that he's unqualified, unfit for the Supreme Court. It shouldn't be there.
Right. But did Roberts have to turn that over? I mean, because I had read the other day that, you know, these complaints were out there, but Roberts, you know, is not going anywhere. The confirmation already happened. The time for this would have been before the confirmation. Did he have to turn it over?
No, none of it. Like, it could have ended before Roberts. It didn't even have to go to him. So, you know, when they passed it off to him, that was one thing. And then when he passed it off to somebody else now, that was another thing. And so they have the option to stop this. Roberts could have just sat on it and just done nothing with it ever. And it would have just sat there forever. And that would have been probably the best tactic. So that does raise some questions about why he did do this. If he personally has some concerns over Kavanaugh being on the bench and wants it to be investigated to either clear him or know for a fact that, you know, what he represents, Roberts may not like the way that he looks on the Supreme Court and how he got there.
Yeah. No, I mean, because look, at the end of the day, it's Roberts' legacy. I mean, you want to talk about, you know, ego and all of that, the ego of Kavanaugh. You know, Roberts has got a similar, probably just as big or if not bigger ego, and looking at how he's going to be viewed through the lens of history.
Yeah, and, you know, Roberts will be the more like moderate, maybe more like a Kennedy kind of guy, because especially with his vote on health care, remember he said that it was a tax kind of thing, but he was the deciding vote there. And, you know, I think John Roberts is going to be the one thing that kind of keeps the Supreme Court from falling off the rails completely. And I think one of the things he wanted to do here is to take appropriate measure to make sure that it was taken seriously, because the letters and things like these are not normal things to happen in regards to conduct complaints. And again, this has nothing to do with the sexual assault allegations. This is completely separate on top of everything else that's happened. So it's, and I think he takes perjury pretty seriously. And if they, I think that the evidence is clear that he's lied multiple times over under oath, 2004, 2006, and presently, about the same situation, about stolen emails from Democratic senators and files. You know, and the guy went to jail for it. He worked with a judge that had his own sexual misconduct claims against him that were viable, who was one of his representatives for, I believe, his 2004 confirmation hearings. He made himself very clear. We dug up some video of one of his confirmation hearings where he said he's a Republican, period. And it, you know, this is the kind of nonsense that we're dealing with. They used it as a campaign. Now, the blowback from this, I think Republicans will feel it for years, because they did it wrong and they shouldn't have done this. And this gives a rallying cry for Democrats through 2020.
No, there's no question about that. And the polling on this, I mean, there's some polling already that shows that, you know, the Democrats have, you know, I've gotten a little bit more energy out of this, because, you know, and I think, you know, a friend of mine said, you know, look, when people are happy, When things go their way, they don't stay engaged very long. But when you feel you've been wronged and you feel you've been cheated, you feel you've been backdoored, you remember that forever. And this is one of those moments where our Democrats are feeling a little chafed and they're going to remember come November.
I mean, I'll tell you my personal story. In 2010, when we passed health care, I was really excited. I think it was like March or May or something. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. It's going to make it so that we keep in control and like all this other madness, you know, is going to subside and we're going to really be able to take it to them. And then you follow that up with losing 60 seats a few months later, 60 plus seats. And then eventually 2 years later, the Senate as well. And so history repeats itself. Now, there's been a very big Republican onslaught in regards to campaigns, elections, but everything, it's kind of like the jig is up. The jig is up in regards to everything, including gerrymandering. They can't really gerrymander much more. It's just obscene at this level right now. They don't represent the American people, and they know it, right. But they're trying to act like it.
But what they're going to do, Scott, is what they did in Georgia. They kicked 561,000 people off the voting rolls. Right. And then they, you know, another 53,000 they're not going to allow to vote, you know, to process their registrations. You see it in Indiana. You see it in Kansas. They're just going to outright steal the election by not allowing people to vote. And you're going to have a Supreme Court who, just like they said the other day, allowed North Dakota to keep their voter ID law that, you know, basically excludes Native Americans. That's where it's going to go. And this is how they're going to hold on to power if we let them.
Yeah. And we, at the Democratic Coalition, we're going to be filing a complaint with the Department of Justice, which of course is, you know, owned by Jeff Sessions. So I'm not sure how far that would go. But to make sure that it's clear that what he did was a violation of the Voting Rights Act, and the Civil Rights Division will have to take it up and respond. And there will probably be press coverage in regards to our filing of the complaint. Because it should be clear that, and we've done this, you know, every election since 2016, 2017 elections, anytime that there is vote fraud, I urge anybody to reach out to the Democratic Coalition and let us know. It doesn't matter what level it's at. We want to make sure that public pressure makes it clear that this is not going to be acceptable, especially in Georgia, where he is the Secretary of State. He controls, you know, who gets to vote and who doesn't, and he's the one running for governor.
Yep.
That's too shady. I think that what he's already done and his staff, they belong in jail. What they're doing is voter suppression 101. And, the fact that people, journalists and the American people in general, Georgian voters especially, they're not going to put up with this kind of madness. And I think you're right. They can't win alone. They can't win. They have no stances on issues. They want to call us mob or snowflakes or weak snowflakes. They want to call us weak, but then strong and scary and terrifying. You have Rand Paul's wife saying she has a loaded gun because she's scared of liberals. But at the same time, you have people calling us weak snowflakes. And like, make up your mind, because at the end of the day, what we are is we're Americans who care about our country, unlike their party, who just want to suck up as much money as they can to spend on, you know, their golden toilet seats and all the other nonsense. They want expensive cheeses and their champagne popsicles that Ivanka's making. I think, like I said before, the jig is up. I don't think that any of these people are going to get away with it. And you have to keep in mind that at the state level and the federal level, we will investigate everything. That I have a list. I have a list of thousands of different things, and I'm not joking, thousands of different things that we have that we're going to assign to, as in like pass out to different members of Congress who represent different kinds of complaints and things that needed to be investigated, that we will make sure is investigated if Dems are to take control. Not only that, if we win control of different states in the governorships in Ohio and Georgia and Florida, that is a great setup for 2022. And we need that for 2020 as well. We need that for 2020's groundwork.
Right.
Really, even just the House, 24 seats, even just the House flips, it is a nightmare for everyone that is a Republican especially Donald Trump, because his tax returns come out, real investigations into Russia and the interference and the attacks on Americans. And that's the thing that's going to come out, is that Republicans and Trump helped Russia attack Americans individually. They attacked them via social media. They attacked them in person. They led to divisive rallies that were combating with each other, you know, basically trying to cause riots and disturbances in America. And apparently, you know, my guess is they helped organize things like Charlottesville. I mean, the point here being is they can't do it without cheating or help from other countries, because Americans don't support them because they don't represent America.
Yeah, that's a good point. You brought up Jeff Sessions a moment ago, and the Washington Post reported today that evidently Trump had conversations with Sessions' chief of staff, this guy Matt Whitaker, about replacing him. Any thoughts on that?
The whole thing is just a big scam, is what I would think at first. But then you look at, I remember when we were pushing for Mueller, or not Mueller specifically, but for a special counsel, and we didn't really know how it works. But what the way we heard back and what we found out, it seems that Jeff Sessions is the one who pushed for Mueller in the first place. And it was because he had Senate meetings with Kislyak, the Russian ambassador, the former Russian ambassador, who was a Russian spy, obviously. But he sat down with him, and it basically was set up so that he was entrapped in a position where they were trying to talk about sanctions, and he refused. And it was under the impression that these conversations were recorded and all this madness. So he was very evasive with the Russians on that front. And I think he didn't fall for it. And he's one of the few. So he got Mueller, the one guy who, if you want to really get to the bottom of it, that's him. And I think at the end of the day, funny enough, that little troll, Jeff Sessions, may have been one of the people who saved our country. I mean, you know, he's still a racist. And
but wasn't he trying to save his own skin? I mean, at the end of this, if the country gets saved, that's fine, well and good. It's his own skin that's most important.
Right. And that's what you're doing in that fact, because if you're assisting with making sure that's an independent investigation that's real, then you're not going to be accused of, oh, you were involved in the transition and everything else and in the cover up. He could have been more negative towards everything. He could have helped shut down things. He could have done a lot of things in the past that he has not done. I do think that the little tiffs that they have between Trump and Sessions, I think all that is manufactured propaganda between the White House. It's just like the whole thing, like Nikki Haley leaving. Like, who cares? Why would it be what are you talking about? Like, why would it be yesterday? Why yesterday if you're leaving at the end of the year? Why that day specifically? You have a hurricane coming. You have elections coming. If she supported him, she would have stayed.
Yeah.
I know I didn't mean to transfer issue.
No, I was going to go there eventually anyway, because at the end of it, it seems curious that, you know, the day after the crew files, you know, a complaint on her financial disclosures, that, you know, all of a sudden, the woman who, you know, who's got the $60,000 curtains, which I know the Obama administration okayed and it was coming anyway. But still, you would think that, you know, very interesting that she leaves on that day.
I mean, 7 private plane flights. I mean, what are you doing? Like, you know, you easily could take, I mean, you're a very senior ambassador and like a diplomat, and, you know, it's not going to be hard for you to be able to get good flight. We want you to be able to travel the world to represent the United States. Like, we want you to do that. What we don't want you to do is meet with businessmen to talk about interests that are in your self-interest, so you can line your own pockets while being on their private planes, again, you know, eating the champagne popsicles and living a lavish life. I'll tell you, I've been on, I don't know, a couple private planes. They're terrifying. I don't like them at all. And I don't understand why they keep on. The same thing happened with, what's his name, Brock? I'm going to say the wrong name. Whoever the guy is at FEMA. I forgot, I'm blanking. But he took private plane flights. Zinke took private plane flights. And these are all so big of violations that the FEMA guy had to pay back the money for his flights. So my guess is Haley's going to be forced to pay back the money for those flights. They're going to act like it was, ethics snafu. But I will tell you this, 100% of the time, every single time, the thousands of people that I've looked into in the past 15 years, every single time that you find one thing, there's always more. Always.
Yeah. As soon as the floodgates open, man.
Always.
As soon as that door opens. And the guy's name was Brock Long.
That's what it is. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So there you go. But, here again, there's the talk that, Nikki Haley's in some financial problems as well. And this could be playing into all of that as well. And again, as you point out, when you start looking, you find a bunch of stuff. And, look, this administration, once the chapters are written, this will be the most corrupt administration in the history of this country, without question. The kleptocracy, I'm hoping we get to see just how bad it is. Before I let you go, I gotta ask about today's op-ed that the Washington Post, their fact checker, claimed that nearly every sentence in Trump's op-ed was false. Mm-hmm. So, again, give him credit. He'd lie when the truth would be better, and he did it quite frequently in this op-ed against Medicare for All.
Yeah, I reached out to USA Today to ask to write a letter to the editor, some sort of response, because if you're going to let someone attack us, then especially with lies and propaganda, then we deserve a chance to respond. And so if the USA Today does not get back to me till tonight, then it will be published at the Washington Post, New York Times, or somewhere else. But I will write a rebuttal for the resistance here, because it was complete nonsense. All it was an attack on Americans for the most part, not even just Democrats, but singling them out to try and make it. I mean, like, who would actually just, let's strip it down. I always say, just strip it down. What are we actually saying? We're saying that we want everyone to be able to have health coverage. Like, we want everybody to have health care and everybody to not be bankrupted from being taken care of in the hospital. And I think anybody that's against that is insane. I don't understand why anybody would be against everybody being able to have a fair shake at healthcare. I think it's a human right, and it's something that Americans deserve the best of.
Exactly.
Not a, like, go die in a ditch if you're not strong enough. I had run two marathons in 1 year in 2007 to 2008. The campaign was 2 days away, and I ran a marathon, and it basically taught me. I at the end of the marathon, I didn't know that I was running it with food poisoning, and I finished the marathon. It took me 6 hours and 37 minutes to finish the 26.2 miles. It was my second marathon in a year. It was a few hours longer than my other time, but I did it with food poisoning, and I didn't know that. Then I was put on meds, which was Cipro, meant to rebuild my body. Eventually, a few weeks later, on Thanksgiving, I basically collapsed, and then I was hospitalized. I went into the hospital. She says, what's wrong with you? And I said, I don't know, but I haven't eaten in basically a week, and I haven't drank water in over 24 hours because I can't actually consume anything. They thought I was going to die. They were very clear about that. I was very lucky to have at least some type of insurance. But it made me realize that, I'm out there on the campaign trail. I'm, digging in, not having any problems with anything. And then, bam, right in the face, you're immobilized and you're realizing, like, I cannot take care of myself. And it can happen to anyone.
Yep.
Any time, for any reason, accidents, whatnot. So we just need to make sure, is it so bad to take care of each other? Is it so bad for us to be able to help each other out?
Well, Scott, even if it's not that, even if it's not taking care of each other, take care of yourself. I mean, this is one of those moments where you go, I should have the best health care we can get. I should have the ability to see a doctor when I get sick. If my kids fall off their bike and break their arm, it shouldn't make us homeless. I mean, you know, at some point, you know, just the radical self-interest of, hey, I should be protected, should be at least the barest of minimums of what we see. And yet, you know, I'm looking at people going, you know, we don't need no health care. Because I actually know people who are going without it. And you go, what exactly are you doing? You're rolling the dice with your future.
And you made a great point there. Medicare for all is not the radical idea. The radical idea is go die in a ditch by yourself. Radical idea is, oh, we're going to have an insurance market, and then everybody's going to have, you know, great choices, and it'll be fine. It's just another smoke and mirrors tactic so that they can save it off.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I don't think people want choices, man. Stop with the choices. People want to be covered when they're sick. People right. want to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick. They want to be able to take their kids to the doctor when they're sick, and they don't want to have to worry about going broke. I mean, this false choice. Oh, you could have all these choices. Look, there are tons of choices out there. The vast majority of them suck. And the reality is, I think people just want to make sure that they're covered. And I look at this op-ed that Trump put out, which is, you know, basically pitting granny against her grandchildren. You know, they're taking your Social Security, granny, and your Medicare. They're going to destroy it so that they can divvy it up amongst their greedy selves. Instead of saying, hey, how do we all do better? They're saying, see, look, screw those kids. You worked for it. You did it. It's yours. They're going to destroy yours. And, you know, it plays to the every bit of that op-ed plays to the worst of who we are.
Right. And I don't think that, you know, I hope that a lot of people don't actually believe what's in there. But, you know, the sad fact of the matter is they read the headline and then they read maybe, you know, a paragraph or two down. And it really is, it's something we'll look back at and be like, I can't believe anyone ever thought that way ever. They basically were fighting for the insurance companies and not for Americans. You're okay with, like you said, people just keeling over and dying and not having health care. I mean, the first thing that they asked me for, I don't even think I had my wallet on me.
Got your insurance card? Where's your insurance card? How are you going to pay us?
So that's what their number one concern was. Great hospital, great, I got great coverage, taken care of and all that. But there was a pause. There was a wait and see. We should never have to deal with that, especially, you know, if you're a parent and you lose your job, you know, your kids, what are your kids just going to rot? If your kid breaks his arm, if your kid gets the flu, or if your kid gets cancer, you know what I mean? Like, this is reality. And I think they live in some kind of, I guess it's delusional land, where they think that, you know, every man for himself, unless we're going to make money together.
Hooray for me and the heck with everyone else. And hey, if I get one of these crummy mini plans that doesn't carry anything, at least I got a cute card for my wallet. Yay.
That'll work, especially when you're bankrupt and don't have any credit.
Sad stuff.
That's what happens. And it takes not only that, keep in mind that, I mean, like I had emergency room services. I had the time that I had to be in there for surgery and procedures. I had the time that I was bedridden for over a month. And then I went and, you know, got to dance on stage at an inauguration with Obama, but I was on a lot of steroids at that point. And then I keeled over for about 6 months. So it takes time to recover, and you cannot plan that. You can't plan any illnesses. And the only thing that you can plan is making sure that you have a route to the hospital that's near you, or know where to go when you do get sick. But you can't plan for that. You can't plan for car accidents. You can't plan for random injuries in sports. And you can't plan for whatever's going to happen with your kids and your grandchildren and anything else. So if we actually care about Americans, then we do want everybody to have health care. And the fact that he's fighting against that is just another monstrous thing, like locking kids up in cages or having a campaign rally in Pennsylvania while people are getting hammered with the largest hurricane ever on record in the continental United States.
I agree. And which is why, again, November is so important. And I'm hoping that people have it on their calendar, the string around their finger, whatever, to remember to vote on November 6th. Scott, I appreciate the time. As always, great talking with you.
Vote and tell your friends to vote. Keep on resisting. Don't take any of their junk. Don't stoop to their level. Try and keep the rhetoric to a minimum. Try not to engage with people if they're going to be vitriol, but keep pressing forward. The mud is thick. It's tough. The road is long, but it is worth it. I'm going to be on it for the next few decades. So we've got a long way to go, but we need to just keep on going forward. Good stuff. Thank you for having me, Rick.
Good stuff. Thanks so much, Scott. As always, our good friend Scott Dworkin. Make sure you check out the Dworkin Report, his podcast. Fantastic stuff. Quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Champagne costs too much. Vodka puts my mouth in gear. While this little refrain should help me explain, as a matter of fact, I like beer.
He likes beer.
Last night I dreamed that I passed from the scene, and I went to a place so sublime.